Cornwell, request for time extension.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The planning office has received a time extension for application 2007-28, Plantation Park Marina Phase 2. The subdivision was originally recorded on June 18th, 2012, and therefore will expire June 18th of this year if they are not substantially under construction. The request did come in prior to the expansion, so per the ordinance that was adopted, they can ask for a six-month time extension from County Council. Staff has reached out to other reviewing agencies. They are currently waiting for a decision from DENREC regarding the approval of a variance for their stormwater management. They have reached out to the County Engineering Department and are in contact with the Division of Public Works. And for DelDOT, at a minimum, they would need to obtain a new entrance permit. Staff does believe there is a possibility for the project to be substantially under construction within that 6 months. That if the council does adopt that, they would be approved through December 18th, 2017.
Any question, Ms. Cornwell?
Why so long? I mean, it seems like they've had a long time to get to where they are.
They did provide a letter explaining what they had done, that they were not aware of, that their other agencies had approved. Again, this came back, it was originally 2007 application, so it got stuck into the recession that hit. They did actually get under recorded. Again, you have 5 years from the date it's recorded to be under substantial construction. The applicant explained in their letter that the original people just did not have, that they were older gentlemen and retired and not active developers, so they were on their own making the application, and they did not have the expertise or experience to complete the project in a timely manner.
It's the same owner today?
I believe this might be a new owner.
And when did that occur?
That I don't have information on.
Excuse me, the letter says we have recently contracted to purchase this property. So they're a new contract purchaser.
I don't like delays just because you got to keep working towards something. If you want to get somewhere, I just don't like last minute.
If you don't want to go talk to people up here at State Highway, if you don't like delays, they'll certainly give you one. Go up here and talk to the natural resources, and they'll give you a nice long one.
Soil conservation. But if you start early enough,
I know
you can. You have a record of your movement.
Do we have a record of their movement?
Again, it was originally approved back in 2007, most likely 2008 time frame. It was actually recorded in 2012, so it took them a number of years. And back in 2007, there was a 22-month period from when you made your application to getting to a public hearing. And then it did get recorded back in 2012, which gave them 5 years to be under construction. And they did provide a time frame that they plan to actually be under construction by the end of October, well within the six-month time frame.
Who's the original owner?
The original owners were
Gerald Wilbus and George Keene.
Well, he died. George Keene did.
No, I don't think he is.
I have no idea.
Mr. President, real quick, yeah?
Sure.
Is this applicant, is this one that fell into when we as a council extended, many subdivisions and allowed them all 6 months last year? I think we did that, correct? Did this particular one here fall into that category?
It did not, because its expiration date is this June. So a lot of them expired December 31st of 2015. This one is actually still valid until June.
And the request is to basically go from June through
December.
October.
December, but they are provided a time frame that they expect to be under construction between September and late October.
Okay.
Right. But the time extension, if we grant the time extension, it actually starts the day that the current one expires, not the day we approve it.
Correct. It would be effective the 6 month from the June 18th date.
Right.
But they have approval from DENRAC.
They're waiting for a decision from DENRAC regarding if they will grant a variance or not for their original stormwater management plan.
And when was that filed with DENRAC?
That was filed a number of months ago. I was in contact with the Conservation District, and they were expecting that decision any day.
So they just filed with DENRAC?
No, they filed a couple of months ago. It was just they have to get through the agency process.
2 months ago. And what about DLDOT?
According to DLDOT, DLDOT had to do a little bit more research, and at a minimum, they would have to update and get a new entrance plan approval.
When did they file with that?
Again, DLDOT believes they might not even actually... this is an extension to an original subdivision, so if they're using the existing entrance, they might not actually need anything from DLDOT. DLDOT had to go back and do a little research, and they were still looking into it. But they did inform me that, at a minimum, they would need a new entrance plan approval.
What really stops them from going out there, go ahead and start? What stops them from going out there trying to start?
Well, they don't actually have a notice to proceed.
In other words, we've given permission at this point, correct?
No, they still need some agency approvals. They still need to go through the Engineering Department, Division of Public Works, to get an updated plans approved, and they have been in contact with that department to do that. And again, they were expecting approval and review by that agency within that 6 month time frame.
Sound like what permission they get from this county from the council doesn't make a whole lot.
Right, they would still need to get all other agency approvals before they could get a notice to proceed and actually be under construction.
Okay.
When did they apply to the engineering department?
That I don't have that off the top of my head. I know they have contacted them. I don't know if they've actually resubmitted, but they have been in contact with the Public Works Department.
This is
7 months.
Yeah, I don't know. We take any public comment, do we?
Typically not.
No. Well.
This is for 7 lots, is that correct? Just
yes.
To reconfirm.
How many lots?
7.
Just 7?
Yes.
And the land's all changed around, right?
New owners.
It's new owners. There's
okay.
A new property owner.
We got new land. We got this land. This land's now become uphill and downhill. So that's why we can't change it.
Right. It's a recorded plan. So
I'm being a facetious. I got to quit.
Any more comments from council? Questions from council?
I think we ought to accept it.
Do you have a motion?
Be it moved that the county council approve a 6 month time extension for application 2007-28 Plantation Park Marina Phase 2.
Pleasure, council.
I made a motion we accept it.
Motion, Mr. Wilson.
I'll second it.
Motion, second, Mr. Arlett, to grant the time extension. Questions on that motion? We'll take the vote, Mr. Arlett.
I do share Councilman Burton's concerns with respect to timelines, and that's why they exist. 10 years, I think, to allow them 3 more months, I think, is what this is ending up being. Is that correct?
It would be an additional six months.
Well, but
expect to be under
June to December.
But they expect to be pretty much there in October. So for that reason, I'm going to say yes.
Mr. Burton?
I say no.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I'll vote yes. Motion carried.
Thank you.
Mr. Medlars.
Good morning, Mr. President. Good morning, Council. Back to the airport. You know that the county owns a number of buildings at the airport. Some of them are quite old and have, compromised pieces of that particular building. The air maintenance building's roof has been repaired a number of times. It's definitely at the end of its life expectancy. It leaks every time it rains, so the leaseholder has asked several times to have the roof replaced, and it is a budgeted item approved by council. So we went ahead, put the design documents together, advertised the project, contacted a number of vendors, and in the end received 3 bids, which you see summarized in the attached bid schedule, and we have a reliable low bidder, we feel we can recommend for award.
Have a motion.
We have a motion also. Be it moved based upon the recommendation of the Sussex County Engineering Department that contract 17-22 Sussex Aero Maintenance Roof Replacement be awarded to JOB Construction Company Incorporated of Bridgeville at the total bid amount $41,879.
Pleasure, Council.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Cole.
Second.
Second, Mr. Arlett. Questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mr. Arlett?
Yes.
Mr. Burton?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Cole?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Motion carried. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. Stewart. Trash violation and enforcement discussion.
Good morning.
Oh, and you brought back up.
Oh, my God.
Mr. Costello, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
We're talking trash.
Yes, talking trash. In the last 3 years, we have worked really, really hard at developing a program that works for us according to the authority that the code provides. So this morning, we want to give you an update about that and discussion about a couple other things. So Ryan Stewart is the chief constable. I think I've trained him well. He's pretty good at what he does, and he's going to start off. Thank you.
Once again, good morning. So one of the main responsibilities of the constable's office is to handle property maintenance complaints in unincorporated portions of the county. So the first portion of our presentation will cover the issues that Sussex County has the authority under our current code to enforce. These issues are commonly referred to as our property maintenance complaints and are initiated by our citizens. The big three that I'm going to discuss this morning are property maintenance complaints under Chapter 80 of lot maintenance, which is grass and weeds. Chapter 115 under our zoning code, which covers unregistered and inoperable vehicles, and also prohibited accumulations of trash. So under Chapter 80, as you can see there, some nice tall grass. This makes up about 50% of the total complaints each year that our office receives. This equates down to about three complaints a day between mid-April and mid-October. So last year in 2016, we handled 339 tall grass complaints. The definitions of the violations are very clear in terms of who is responsible for the issues on the property. As you'll see here in the lot maintenance code, that the owner of the property is responsible to keep their grass and weeds under 12 inches in height. We do receive a lot of calls about tree limbs and shrubs and things of that nature, which we do not enforce at this time. It's simply grass and weeds.
Are we allowed to ask questions as we go, or you want him to present?
I just want to, is there a clarification on the size of parcel for that?
If the property is not being used for bona fide agricultural purposes, the size of the parcel does not really concern us at this point in time. Anything over 5 acres that is being used for agricultural purposes is exempt from the code. However, if you own a large parcel and it's being sold to a developer and you just allow it to grow out of control, it is going to fall under that and need to be maintained.
Okay. But you get very few complaints from large parcels, I would assume, because...
Yes. Yeah. Most of our complaints on grass are yeah. residential in nature.
Yeah. I can't imagine anybody complaining about 20 acres. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
If they had, they need to find another job.
Probably the most unpleasant complaint our inspectors respond to are trash, household trash accumulated on people's property.
Picture your backyard, Sam.
That's why I'm not in the wrong color house.
These complaints do occur in every type of neighborhood out there. Last year, the constable's office responded to 236 trash complaints. Once again, our code is very definitive on who is responsible. It is clearly defined in the code, as you'll see here, whereas the owner of the property is prohibited to allow the accumulation of trash or rubbish to accumulate on their property.
On all these issues, basically, it's the property owner who's
yes,
responsible?
Yes, okay. sir. The owner of the parcel is the person that we hold responsible.
Do you first go to the property owner or do you go to the resident? What is the first step? Like, say that issue right there, we're looking at that picture. Get a complaint. What do you first do?
Our first step is to inspect the property in question. We make contact with the people that are at the residence at that time, find out who the owner is, where the owner is, and then we contact that person.
Okay. Gotcha. Because the owner may not even know this exists.
Exactly.
Many times, right?
Exactly. And then we'll move into our vehicle violations, the parking and storage of unregistered vehicles. Last year, the office responded to 95 such complaints in the county for junk vehicles. The junk vehicle ordinance, as the other two, is also very descriptive in its definition. Now, we often get feedback that allowing two inoperable or junk vehicles on a property does contribute to the eyesores in the community. But in Chapter 115-191, there are allowed to be no more than two unregistered or inoperable or dismantled vehicles. And in our code, a vehicle is anything that requires a registration plate or sticker from the state of Delaware. So these are your cars, your boats, your trailers, your RVs, your personal watercraft, your motorcycles. So anything that requires a registration, you're allowed to have two of those in just about any condition on your property. Once again, the owner is the responsible person.
Right, and this is within a subdivision and even outside of subdivisions?
This is in all incorporated areas in the county.
So on to Mr. Cole's point, these three areas that you just discussed, this does not supersede, or does it supersede, our code as it relates to the HOAs?
This is the deed restrictions. We enforce, and we do not get involved with deed restrictions or HOA regulations.
But if a property is within an HOA?
We allow them to have two. If the HOA restricts that further, then that's for them to handle. We
right.
do not enforce the HOA's restrictions.
So, thank you.
Okay. But do lawnmowers and boat engines and all that stuff?
Tractors, things of that nature do not fall into that category. However, if you have an accumulation of lawnmowers, say you have 400 of them, that's obviously not a reasonable amount. And at that point, we would more consider that a trash issue or a junk issue than a vehicle.
About 20?
10.
It depends on the way 20? That they're stored.
Really?
Our code does require that any recyclable materials or usable products be kept in an organized fashion.
So if they lined them up in their yard, that would be organized?
Depending on the amount.
But we don't have that in writing anywhere, the amount, right?
Well,
so that somebody can argue that. If we got in front of some judge and judge says, you know, where is it in your regulations that say you can't have 20...
We get into more of the organization and the amount that they have. If it appears that you are running a junking operation, then you are then running a business off a property, and you would have a bigger issue with planning and zoning than you would necessarily with our office until it came back for enforcement. So you can have a reasonable amount of things. However, if you're bringing in trailer loads of junk and old appliances and things like that on a weekly basis, then you're obviously running, at that point, a business off your property and not simply having your own things.
My only question is to David, I don't know, does our code really specify on what they're talking about, as opposed to just implied, or it's our policy, and how do you enforce that when we do take, you know, legal action against some of these, what we consider a violation, but then we don't have it, you know, in any kind of...
Yeah, the code does not give a number other than, in this case, two vehicles, but...
Well, how do you defend that? You're the...
I guess a better question is, at the things you've taken to court, how many have you lost?
We have not lost any since I've been with the county.
Okay.
Now, there are also not many that we end up having to take to court
sure.
at this time, where we have a very good record with compliance.
You have a few complaints, correct?
We actually handled over 600 complaints last year.
Or too many lawnmowers.
No,
no.
All complaints.
All complaints.
And you are also a complaint-driven agency?
Yes.
So yep. If you drove by something that was obvious, you just keep driving?
We are complaint-driven, as I'll get into here in our next slide. You know, other than citizen complaints, we do receive complaints from other departments and other outside agencies. So we will respond to any complaint that we receive from anybody. The complaints normally are called into our office. They are then assigned to our staff for inspection. Once an inspection is performed, we verify whether there is or is not a violation at that property, and notice is prepared. The delivery of notice is very specific in our code, and it requires us to either hand deliver it, send it certified mail to the property owner, or post the property once the certified mailing is returned undeliverable. Once we make notice delivered officially per the code, our compliance period then begins. So if we have to send the notice certified mail, their 30-day corrective action period does not begin until they sign for that notice and we receive the card back in our office. Now, our code is also very specific in how they must be prepared. It also says that they shall be in writing. All of our notices include a tax parcel number of the property in question, a description of the violation that's taking place on the property, and the required corrective action compliance period. So for tall grass in Sussex County, this is a 5-day issuing. So we give them a notice, they have 5 days to correct the problem. On trash and vehicle violations, it's not less than 30 days. So until we make delivery of the notice, the 30 days does not begin.
Seems like it should be turned around the other way, because cars have been sitting there for years. They've had plenty of time to move, and grass could shot up in no time.
That it can. So, like I said, the notices are to be delivered personally, sent by certified mail, or posted on the property in the event that we receive the certified mailing back as undeliverable. So when these things happen, we then go, we actually post the notice on the property in a conspicuous place. Now, some of these things we have no control over. In some instances where violations result in court action, we do have to start the process over and consider it a second offense. And most of these issues have been present long before we've received the complaint. Once court actions are taken, it may be an additional 60 to 90 days more before the case is heard. We have to issue a summons, schedule an arraignment. If they plead not guilty, then there's a trial. And if they request any continuances before then, those are usually granted. Now, the courts may order corrective action, but they typically do not in cases of property maintenance issues. And as this process plays out, it does appear that we are not doing anything. Now, here is a timeline for a typical violation that requires the property to be posted. In 2016, we had 259 notices sent by certified mail, which resulted in 49 properties needing to be posted due to undeliverable notices. So, as you'll see here, on day one, we receive the complaint. It's entered into our system. Between day two and three, an inspection is performed. If a violation is noted, as it's going to be in this case, we will then send a notice, certified mail, to the property owner, usually on day four. The post office typically will hold these notices for 21 days and attempt multiple times to deliver over that 21-day period. If they are unable to deliver for any reason, it will then be returned to our office. Once returned, we will post the notice on the property, which are now around 26 days out from the date of the original complaint. The time period for that corrective action does not start until we post that property. So now we have 30 days that we have to wait before a reinspection can occur. If there are no changes or improvements to the property at that point in time, we will issue a summons, at which time the court will send us a notice to the property owner that they have to appear in court. The time frame for that is usually 30 days before the arraignment. So as you can see, from the time the complaint's called in on an issue where we have to post the property, it's around the 90-day mark before we ever get to even go to court. And all they have to do with the arraignment is plead not guilty and a trial scheduled for at least 30 days out. So it can be a very timely process.
And this automatically pops up when you say in the system, it goes into like a computer, and the computer will, like on your screen that you're sitting at your desk or one of your inspectors, right, it'll pop up and say it's day 25 on this particular notice. I mean, are we systematically following these? And
yes, our system will send the inspector an email stating that they have a scheduled follow-up.
Okay.
When our secretary receives a signed notice back, she enters it into the system and automatically schedules a follow-up.
Yeah, because I think in the old days, a lot of the stuff, you know, got a violation, got put somewhere, and then unless somebody said something, it wouldn't rise to the top of that pile.
2 years ago, it was a paper trail.
Boom.
So it's come leaps and bounds since then.
Oh, that's good.
Thanks to Mr. Costello. So.
Thank you, Mr. Pritchard.
Abatement. When all other options have failed, we may remove the violation from the property. A contractor is secured in these instances, and the property is cleaned up. The owner is then billed. If not paid, a lien is filed against the property, which in the Recorder of Deeds office, and sometimes go unpaid for quite some time.
Mm-hmm. What's the typical percent of, I mean, of the, you know, 200, probably not grass, I'm assuming, but probably, or maybe it is grass. I don't, some people aren't doing it. Do we send somebody out there to cut the grass, I guess? Is that, I mean, can you share some statistics on that?
Well, I don't really know how many grass, we don't cut a lot of grass. We do not get into a lot of that issue. It is rare that we remove a violation from an occupied property, which is normally what we deal with. In those circumstances, we do work with the property owner and the people there to bring them into compliance without us having to get involved.
You said that is the number one problem, right? Grass, weeds?
Grass is the most common complaint that we get.
That's what I understood.
Yes.
Do we have people that circumvent it by getting their properties designated natural area or something? Isn't there a designation they can get and saying it's a...
Unless they are using it for bona fide agricultural purposes, then no.
There's no certification they can go and get somebody to come in and say...
If it's a... The only instances we get into that are stormwater areas. Say you've got some of the older developments that have stormwater areas, mm-hmm. and they just allow their grass to start growing. In those instances, we've had some work with DENREC. And soil conservation and come in and plant the appropriate plant material that is exempt from the code. So in those instances, we do work with them and allow them to get that taken care of.
Did you say you hauled the cars away? Did I hear that?
No, and I'm getting ready to get into that.
All right.
But you know, most of the properties that we do abatement procedures on are abandoned or foreclosed upon, so they're usually vacant. The majority of the violation notices that were sent to those properties were returned undeliverable and required posting. And once serviced, the billing has also gone unpaid, which requires us to place a lien against the property in the Recorder of Deeds. And that is an extra cost to the county. So that's our normal issue there.
When we recoup the lien, is it just, how do you calculate how much they owe us? Do we include legal fees? David, when we do a lien against a property like this, do we include
it
cost to clean up everything?
It can. Typically, the constable is the one who does those liens.
Yes, but file those liens directly.
You just file them directly? Okay. Well, how do you have a methodology to?
We have a spreadsheet that we keep track of, and we make a file for each property that we have invested money in and placed a lien against. So until that is closed, we have an open record.
And we do recapture when we do it. I guess we don't do it that often, but when we do it, we do capture enough funds to cover the county?
Yes, we recuperate everything that we spent aside from the filing fees for the lien. That is a $30 fee to file and a $30 fee to release. So that is something that we have to cover.
Hmm. Interesting.
Now, our current code does provide a method of abatement, but not for all the violations that we handle. The current code allows us for the removal of trash and grass. However, it does not provide a method for us to remove vehicles from a property.
Which was your question earlier about the vehicles. So the code's pretty specific. If the grass is too tall and they won't cut it or can't cut it and we have to cut it, we can go in and we can correct it. But the vehicles, there's no provision in the county code that allows us to do that.
Should we fix that?
It's a good question. So let's talk about some of the things that we've learned. The compliance period for some of these violations may be too long. Take a look at if you recall the picture of the trash. It was there for a long time before the lady called to complain about it, and now an entire summer is going to go by before we can actually even get heard in court. So there are times that those things, they just keep mounting on top of each other. Court actions may prolong the issue. You know, if we issue a summons and they get their arraignment date, then they plead not guilty, then they ask for a court continuance, and, you know, the courts are pretty good about giving them those things. So it just all adds on top of that, and it appears that we're not doing what we're charged to do. The proper service can be costly and time-consuming. Every one of those certified mails that we have to send out are about $7, and you saw how many we sent out in 2016. our chronic violators know the system. They know that from day one until the day they go into court for a trial, if they correct that on the day of trial, we're going to dismiss the charge. Because we've always been to the point that if they're making progress, we're going to allow them to continue the progress. Because compliance is really what we're asking for. So if they achieve compliance on the day of the trial, we'll just dismiss the charge. And recovering abatement costs through our current process is very restrictive. It's restrictive in terms of what we're allowed to go in and do. And then it's restrictive because every time that grass gets over 12 inches, we have to reserve them with another notice and then start all over again. Or the trash bags. Once we get it corrected, we got to start all over again. So there's another 30 days, and keep that timeline in mind. So let's talk about what others are doing. We had an opportunity to talk to Newcastle County Code Enforcement, had some short conversations with Kent County. Newcastle, they have adopted an administrative process called civil ticketing. And the notices don't require to be certified mail. They can be hand-delivered, they can be sent by regular mail, or they could be posted on the property. So that gets rid of all your certified mailing costs, that gets rid of tracking all those and that type of thing. The compliance periods, where for trash and vehicles, ours is 30 days, typically theirs is 10. Now, I'm not making any suggestions as to the time frames, but I'm just saying maybe 30 days is unreasonable to get rid of your trash. The fines are sent out by mail, so there's no court actions that are actually required. This is an administrative in-house program. So if you don't cut your grass, we send you a notice of violation. If you still don't cut your grass on a reinspection, we print out a ticket, we stick it in the mail, and we send it to you. Anyhow, that's what Newcastle County is doing at this current time.
So Mike, if I may, the court proceeding that currently exists, is that something that we as a council had put into the code, or is that something that the state requires?
That is it's a Sussex County code. It's a criminal matter. So we have to go through the Justice of the Peace Court, who has exclusive jurisdiction over any code enforcement violation that we have. What I'm expanding on is an administrative process, not a criminal process. This is something that we would house of our own. We would have our own process, our own mechanisms of providing an option like this. So,
question would be, David, can we do this without having to go to the legislature and get enabling legislation?
You could amend the code to provide for civil
stuff
ticketing.
Like, okay. Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry.
It'd be a miracle for us to move up faster because I've got people live in my house, give them notice to go. Same action you just said. It takes at least 90 days to get them out.
Yes, sir. So one of the other things is
we're going to do it faster.
Yes, sir.
In one sense.
If abatement is required, we can move to that process much sooner. And it doesn't really matter if somebody's occupying the property or not. And the unpaid costs in this process, which is different than what our process is right now, is that the fees and the costs associated with abating a problem get charged like normal and regular real estate taxes. Where our process right now is that we have to file a lien against the property in the recorder of deeds, and until they sell that property, we're never going to get our money back.
May not get sold.
Correct.
In 100 years.
Yes.
Yeah, Mike, I don't know that you're doing a compliance issue if they wait till the last day and then they cut the grass and then they keep doing the same thing. They wait till the last day and cut it. They're not complying. They're understanding the system.
And that's exactly what has happened. But the issue is that if we go into that courtroom, let's just say that they don't cut their grass and we have to go into the courtroom, they get fined. As soon as we walk out of there, we have to start all over again. And if they had to pay a $250 fine, they just pay the $250 fine and they just move on. But we still have a property that's not been taken care of. So we have to start all over again. We don't really have a means to get to where we need to be. So, and the facts that Newcastle County was providing to us is the ticketing and the abatement pays for itself. And I'm going to use the figures that they provided. And no, it's not apples to oranges. But Newcastle County, they pretty much generate $750,000 in their civil ticketing process, and their abatement costs are about $500,000.
Interesting.
Yes. So in all such instances, the county's authority is over the owner of the property. And every complaint that comes in gets handled to the full extent that the county code allows us. So being that we are complaint-driven, we are charged to be complaint-driven, and we are restricted by the current process outlined by our code, there is really no opportunity to respond to these property maintenance complaints any faster than what we're doing today.
Because of staff?
No, sir. Because of the code.
Oh, because of code?
Yes. So, any questions before I
move on? No, I mean, do we need more staff? I didn't mean, I wouldn't criticize the current staff. I mean, do we need more staff?
You're digging yourself today, aren't you, a little bit?
But I do have a question.
Yes, sir.
And it goes back to a little, like, we're complaint-driven, and I'm having problems with it being a complaint-driven enforcement in so many areas of this county. And here's another one that kind of concerns me. As inspectors are out and about in the county, and they see it, they ride by and they see a potential problem. Next time they go by, it's gotten bigger. Next time, it's, you know. In other words, we could nip some of this maybe in the bud, or be a little, again, proactive. Is there a possibility we could start instructing our, and maybe it takes the council to redirect, you know, the way we go after complaints, but that if you see something that's obviously a complaint, address it maybe with a courtesy call. That, you know, maybe we have some kind of form that says you were
invited. If you see something, say something.
Pardon me?
If you see something, say something type.
Well, that sounds good.
That's the bully.
But anyway, I'm just saying that maybe, again, complaint-driven enforcement has its problems. And again, I ride by a couple properties, and it's obvious to me, but it's not my job to, you know, complain about them and turn them in.
Yes, sir.
But, I mean, I should. And after it gets really bad, I do. But I'm just thinking our inspectors who are charged with doing this, if they see it and it's starting to get worse, then they know they got a problem.
Well, the answer to that lies with the question you asked just before that. Is do we have enough staff? We have enough staff to handle the process in the manner that we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. Should we move to something that's not complaint driven, that we're doing this proactively, the current staff would not work.
Okay, but yeah, I mean, do you sense there'd be a lot of issues if your staff is out riding around currently? I mean, there's a lot of stuff you guys are seeing that...
Well, if I was still doing code enforcement, I don't know that I would get off of my street, so... So what's more important, the...
You live on Wilson Road also?
No, sir. Oh. So I guess what I'm saying is that the importance is what the citizens of Sussex are calling in. Those are what we're handling. So the, you know, breaking out of that mold, so to speak, is a call for counsel. So
I'm being threatened, Mr. President.
So let's move into our another hot topic of the day, is roadside littering and dumping. So... It's highly visible. It impacts everybody in our county. It reflects poorly on who we are, and it diminishes our reputation in this county. So the first thing we need to do is understand that dumping and littering are criminal and traffic offenses, and any peace officer in the state are charged with enforcing these. We are the Sussex County staff. We do not have police officers. We're not peace officers that are able to do anything about the littering and the dumping laws that are in the state. So the Delaware Department of Natural Resources, who maintains a hotline for this, and we've sat down and we've spoken with them, and the question that we asked them is, how can we assist you in these matters? And the response was, call the 800 number. If your citizens call in here complaining about these matters, call the 800 number. And we often do that. When somebody will call into the constable's office to complain about a roadside dumping or a problem dump site, we will generally make that call for them so that we're not inundating we're not stressing the resident out to make the call on their own. We got the information, we know where it is, we're just going to go ahead and pass the information along for them. So that's a service that the constable's office will provide for them.
Mike, do we have any numbers as it relates to state police? Because that's who handles our unincorporated areas. How many tickets they have provided this last year in Sussex County? Do we have any numbers?
I do not.
And what is the fine if a ticket is issued?
Well, it depends on what the charge is. Under the traffic law, there's various charges. They start out at $200 and go up. If you charge under the conservation, it starts at $100, goes up to $500, and even more. But it just depends on the approach. Whether it's the traffic manual or it's the criminal manual, that you're using to charge that offense with.
Could you find out that information?
Sure.
I think that would be very relevant.
Sure.
I would think.
Yes.
Aren't they going to have to see that person do the act?
Sure.
You have his tag, don't you? It's just for
that's
in most cases.
There are many times where evidence is all you need. You don't necessarily need to see the person throwing it out, but there are other mechanisms, and I can speak from my prior history that if there is evidence there that leads a person or leads a peace officer to believe that person committed the offense, get a warrant, take it up in court. So you don't necessarily have to see the person do it, but if there is evidence to suggest that they did it, then you do have a mechanism to stand on.
Mike, in your previous experience with the DNREC, were you aware that the state police were involved in the enforcement of roadside littering?
Generally, the state police and other municipal police departments, if they saw an incident like that, they would tend to handle it under the traffic manual, the traffic provisions, where the Department of Natural Resources would handle it through the Conservation Code or Title VII, which is specific. Department of Natural Resources has jurisdiction over solid waste everywhere in the state. And they have a couple of different sections in Title VII that allow them to take enforcement action. So, but generally not the state police for like dumping, but if a state police officer sees somebody throwing something out the window or depositing trash along the roadway or any place, they could take action under the traffic site statutes.
I'm curious on the trash. I mean, granted, grass is kept in-house. Correct? That's never referred to another agency.
Correct.
So you've got the two other categories that you've outlined thus far, 236 complaints this last year with regard to trash. And how many of those that were referred over to DNREC?
Those are 2016. None of those were turned over to DNREC. Those are all county code. The owner is responsible for the activity that's occurring on their property,
okay,
that they generate on their property. Now,
so,
some of them may be concurrent, but none of them were totally just turned over to the Department of Natural Resources.
Well, I know the one day, of course, that I had visited,
yes,
with you guys, and I appreciate that experience. I would say the 2 weeks that we did that, two times, one of which was that 19-acre parcel, which was obviously illegal dumping. And the illegal dumping, it was determined by we as a county. I know I was with you that particular day and referred this over to DNREC. So, and then I know a few weeks later, there was a report of somebody being arrested. Was that that same parcel?
That was that same parcel.
That was that same parcel.
Yes. That doesn't mean that we had referred that complaint totally over to them and eliminated any involvement that we have.
Sure.
We are still engaged with that property, with the property owner, for remediation purposes.
Correct. But I mean, criminals, i.e. who did this, and then the other piece of the equation, which is our responsibility, is actually cleaning it up.
Correct.
So, which I have to tell you, and I will publicly commend and compliment DNREC, because I think that day, it was what, maybe a month or less than a month, they found whoever was doing this and took action. I think, what do we have to do to get more of that? Because there's a lot of other issues throughout this county that are not resolved. As an example of, and is this going to be in your presentation, the 500,000 tires over in Del Mar?
No, sir.
Because that is another issue, of course, that falls under DNREC, and yet it continues to be out there for 10 years, we're told, and yet nothing gets done.
The tires is a sidebar note for sure, and it's not a material that we regulate. It is a regulated material because the Department of Natural Resources has incorporated a scrap tire into their definition of what a refuse or rubbish is. We do not have that definition. That's a DNREC issue. They incorporated the definition. They incorporated that regulation. It's a state issue. The county does not have a definition that would incorporate a scrap tire. The way it sits now, a scrap tire is not subject to trash, waste, or debris accumulated on a property by the property owner.
Can we change that at the county level? If the council so chose to, I don't know.
You can amend the ordinance.
How many TARs are you talking about?
We need a list of things to amend our ordinance with. We just need the list.
The first question is, does a council, this council, want to have authority over a material like, we'll talk tires in this discussion, do you want to have that authority? Because if you have that authority, then that means we're the ones they're calling to dispose of a site like what we know Del Mar looks like.
Yeah, you'd be first to call. They call.
We're going to be first to call anyway.
Right now, we have no authority over a site like Del Mar.
I know that. Well,
I guess the question I have is, we got to find a solution. I mean, in the end, if it, you know, 500,000 tires sitting out there, per suggested by our own constables, for 10 years, that's inexcusable and unacceptable. I mean, so how do we solve the issue? If Denrick's not going to do their job, what do we do? Do we just ignore it? I don't know.
I guess we have to make Denrick do the job, Rob, that's all I can say.
What's that?
We have to make Denrick do the job, that's all I know.
What does Newcastle County do in this? Let's go back to Newcastle County, see what they do.
Well, I would imagine that in Newcastle County, because they have the budget to do this, they would abate the property and assess the cost towards the taxes for that property. So it's a budgeting issue at that point.
Well, but you're talking about, we're not talking about now 5 or 10 tires on somebody's property.
No, sir. If you use the...
You're talking about that piece of... We paid for some tires out here on the highway a few years back.
Yes, sir. And I was going to reference
that. That pile in Del Mar would be at least $750,000.
Yes, sir.
Or more. You'll never get back from that property.
Correct. Without labor costs, the site that we cleaned up in Georgetown was about $125 a tire for disposal purposes.
Right.
About $125 a tire.
But tracking the landowner could result in other properties that could be leaned, right? If that one piece of property has a value of X, but it's associated with other ownership properties, then a lien becomes more enforceable because you have the amount of property value to offset the remediation of the tires.
Are you referring to a separate property?
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's an LLC.
Correct.
Yeah, that's right. LLC, you don't
track them.
No, you cannot.
No, not with an LLC.
Yeah.
We each can't touch it. Separate entity.
You can't touch an LLC.
We can touch
Mr. Rutt?
If you have a suit against an LLC or a judgment against an LLC and they own the property, it's against that property.
That's it.
That LLC.
But, right.
On that property.
But you can't. Well, if they own other properties under that LLC, under that, but see what happens is,
but you bet they're smarter.
They keep changing the name, but if you have a judgment against an owner, it attaches to all real estate that owner owns.
Right. Right. Well, here's what Mr. Burton said: we could attach something that same LLC would own.
Right. No, it's.
But what you find in most cases, I think,
most
is
cases
that
you find that they
might be the same people with 15 LLCs, right. All different names, and you get that one.
With several either judgments or mortgages against the properties.
Sure. Well, I go back to my point about enforcement. If we've known this for 10 years, everybody pretty much in the area knows it's there. It's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. If we're proactive in some of these issues, like on something like this, maybe we can prevent getting to this point. So, again, I just think that somewhere along the line, we've got to stop being, you know, a complaint-driven, you know, a knee-jerk reaction to something that might have been festering for 10 years just because certain neighbors were fine with it. And anyway, I just, again, it's an enforcement issue. And should we take on tires? Probably should. But once they get to this size, I don't know, you know, then it's like, then we're like, we're scared to death of it now because what the impact financially would have on the county.
Yes, sir.
You know, so.
We solicit private guys. I mean, I think there's other options out there. I mean, I know I've received some calls from, you know, from folks that that were certainly wanting to be a part of the solution on the private side. I'm on the recycling piece. You know, I think there's opportunities out there.
They offer the recycling for free?
Well, there's discussions being made. There's opportunities for them to create an income because of the inventory of amount of tires. But I think also to that point, there is a current program that exists, correct? From Denrick and the state of Delaware, as it relates to we all buy tires and we are charged.
Program, yeah.
Can you elaborate on that program a little bit?
From what I understand is that the scrap tire program is. There's a fund that's every tire that is purchased in the state of Delaware, and from my understanding, it doesn't matter if it's a used tire or a brand new tire, it's assessed with a fee. And that fee is supposed to be forwarded to a fund to manage scrap tire piles, you know, throughout the state. The caveat is that that tire pile, you need to prove that that pile was there prior to 2006. So if it is a pile that was generated after 2006, they're not supposed to be able to use those funds to remediate that. So I can't tell you whether that pile in Del Mar was there prior to 2006 or not.
Google Earth, right?
Yeah. Yes.
That could be a mechanism.
But in a nutshell, that's my understanding of what the scrap tire program is.
So in your estimation, how do we solve the issue? What do we do with regard to the tires?
I'd have to send you up a helicopter more regular.
Well, I don't know that I have a solution to that, but I can tell you that if you adopt a scrap tire program or you incorporate a tire into the regulation as a waste, you now own that. And if you own that, you'll have to
do something.
We'll be responsible for cleaning that up. So it's a major step for sure. It's a major step. Which I imagine why is it took so long for the state to get to a point where they decided they needed to do it. So.
Okay.
Okay. So this is very important. The relationship that Department of Transportation and Department of Correction has is really vital in our community. Without them, their long-standing partnership, a lot of the problems that we see on our roadways would just be totally worsened. It seems that between DLDOT and Department of Corrections, as well as some volunteer groups, are responsible for cleaning up a lot of the litter and debris that you see. The Department of Correction provides cleanup assistance through their work crew assignments when staffing permits. What's important to remember here is that Department of Corrections' primary role is the safety and security of the inmates housed in the state of Delaware. They do waste and trash collection as a service when they have staffing available. So if they have a shortage inside the institution for correctional officers, that position that would normally have gone to staff that inmate cleanup crew is going for security of the institution. So it's my understanding that on a weekly basis, there are an average of 5 to 7 inmate crew cleanups somewhere in the county during that week. Now remember, Sussex County is very large. So by the time they get inmates activated, they load up in the van and they go to a site to do it, there'll be a certain number of hours that they clean up, put them back in the van, and they bring them back to the institute. So that's a day. And generally, there's 5 to 7 of those crews working in the county. I'm sorry, not 5 to 7 crews, 5 to 7 shifts someplace in the county. Generally, they'll get assigned to a yard. If the yard doesn't have anything for them or it hasn't have anything on their list, they'll get reassigned someplace else. But typically, 5 to 7 crew shifts per week.
Do we monitor that at all? I mean, are we informed of when they're going out there? I mean,
we are not. That is not.
There's zero communication.
It's just a matter that it has not been our program. We are a user of that program. If we get citizens who call in there and say, "Hey, we've got really bad conditions on this section of the road, who do I call?" We'll take that information and we'll relay it over to Department of Transportation. That'll get placed on their list, and we've been seeing pretty good success with that. One of the things that we wanted to talk about is how can we play a better role in the relationship between Department of Natural Resources, Department of Transportation, and the Department of Corrections in regards to getting these matters cleaned up. So if they can only get to, you know, if they can only get to a certain amount of miles of roadway in a week because of the reduction in staffing, is it possible that we can play a bigger part by supporting Department of Correction in staffing those crews? So law enforcement, they enforce the laws related to litter and dumping in the state. They receive complaints from the community as well, and they will, when available, patrol the problem areas in our community. DENREC does maintain an 800 complaint line, and they have encouraged us to call that when folks are calling them or calling us about some of those issues. Department of Transportation maintains the roadways and the right-of-ways in the state. Department of Correction assists by providing cleanups when staffing's available, and again, 5 to 7 crew shifts per week. And what we currently do right now is we have a partnership with Delaware Crime Stoppers. So if somebody sees somebody dumping, see something, say something, we encourage that in our citizens. And if they call Crime Stoppers and they provide the information, that information is forwarded to law enforcement. And if law enforcement uses that just to make an arrest, we will provide a reward from that. We were responsible for several tips, but no arrest at this point. In 2015, we had started off with a $100 fine. We have even increased that to $200 fine. In theory, it's a great way to get our citizens involved, but it's just not panning out for us. We is also make
a $200 fine.
I'm sorry, reward. $200 reward. Thank you, sir.
Mike, got a question for you.
Yes.
Do the prisoners see this as like a happy day? I mean, are they out of jail and cleaning up? Are they like, is this kind of a reward to them?
I'm not sure, sir. I'm not sure. The majority of these workers are coming from the violation of probation. So I believe they are required to do something in the terms of work. So if they can't find a job, they're going to give them a job. So this might be it.
Well, Mike, they also, I think the same road crews, they were cleaning a church when I drove here this morning, a cemetery. So they do that also amongst the roadside stuff. So I don't think they're totally dedicated to roadside litter.
Yeah.
Unless there's a different cemetery.
Well, I may be incorrect, but those crews are also sponsored. So if you're not assigned to that type of a crew, you might be assigned to this type of a crew. But the ones that they have assigned for roadway crews, they can get staffing for that, and normally 5 to 7 shifts in a week's time.
Okay. And so, Mike,
yes,
according to roadway crews, the reason they don't have any out there is because the drivers drive the vans. I've also talked to those guys. They said if we had more drivers, we'd get more people out here on the highway picking up trash.
Drivers for the inmate vans?
In other words, they need more drivers to drive the inmate vans. Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's the staffing we're talking about.
They understand the short of staff.
Yes, sir.
So maybe we ought to give more money for staff to the police. They might get more done. Who knows?
That is definitely an option for us. So we actually will make online submissions on behalf of residents who call in here to complain. I mentioned that earlier. And we make requests for specific sections of roadway. So one of the possibilities that we could look at is investigate supplementing the Department of Correction to add dedicated staffing for crews, drivers, like you had said. I have met with the warden over at the violation of probation on 2 occasions, and he says that is definitely something that they would consider. And the discussions were that if funding was provided to supplement that, would it be in addition to or would it be in place of? And what I left that meeting was it would be to supplement on top of the 5 to 7 crews that they have working every week. So if we could get one additional driver assigned to those crews, if we could get twice as much roadway cleaned up.
How do we confirm that? I mean, obviously, we want to partner with them. I mean, I know there is a Ms. Jennings, of course, through our Delaware State Police Partnership, has a mechanism to ensure we know how many state police are in this county as it relates to the 44 funding ones that we provide, you know, through the council. So what mechanism would there be in place to ensure that it's going to be on top of instead of?
A contract, probably. And I have asked for specific figures on what it would cost to secure a full-time employee for that position. I'm still waiting for that information now, but I know that the warden is working on it for us.
Okay. Mr. Arlett, if this is something the council would like to entertain, we would have to consider that in our upcoming FY18 budget proposal for funding for additional staff. We would then enter into, referenced an MOU or a contract like Mr. Costello with the Department of Corrections to figure out the parameters in which the county could help supplement this arrangement.
Okay, thank you.
So in all such instances, the county's authority is over the owner of the property. for actions occurring on the particular property. So every complaint that comes in right now is getting handled to the full extent that our county code allows us. Being that we're complaint-driven and restricted to the current process outlined by code, there's really no opportunity to respond to these property maintenance complaints faster than we are. And I'm available, and Ryan's available for any questions that you may have.
Questions of council?
Yes. Of the 95 vehicle complaints this last year, you mentioned our code does not permit us the removal of cars.
That's correct.
So somebody's complaining, and we have no authority, really no teeth in the code to do anything about it.
The only authority that we have is to issue a summons and let the court take care of it.
And what has happened in those examples?
We have a limited amount of those that have made it to court. We have a very good record of compliance. A lot of those have taken well longer than the 30-day compliance period. However, like Mr. Costello stated, if a person is making progress towards compliance, we will allow them that time to comply. So I think I have right now two pending legal actions against vehicle violations. So we're really good at getting compliance. However, it does take us time, because the only thing we can do is have them find in court, reissue another notice, and start the process over again.
But this has also been tried in previous court matters where the property owner doesn't believe that the county has the authority to make them take anything off of their property. It's their property. And we've had those challenged in court to our success. But there are some folks that you have to take them that far.
Questions?
I was thinking of one.
You know, I it's a little personal for me because, you know, my mom, just be blunt, you know, my mom was a hoarder, and her home was condemned back in Oregon, and I had to deal with that. And, you know, in what cases... In what situations, in what cases can you, we have a pretty big county and with a lot of vastness to it. So in what cases, you know, do we have to condemn a property because of this condition and somebody's not complying? And what, can you share a little bit about that?
Well, I can sympathize about the hoarding issue. And we see that firsthand. There are a handful, if not more, of properties in Sussex County where they don't mean to live like that. It just happens.
Sure.
And there are some properties, and President Vincent, you're aware of a few of them, that we have literally had to work with them for over a year and a half to get them closer to compliance. And I can tell you, Ryan has been especially good in his approach to some of these people, because we'll get in there and if you can imagine, when you pull in the driveway, you're already off to a negative because you're getting ready to get out and tell somebody that they're doing something that they're not allowed to do. So you got to leave there on a positive note. And that relationship that you start off with the owner of the property is many times the only initiator of compliance you're going to get. And if you blow it there, your long-term solution to getting compliance on that property is not good. There have been times Ryan has had a conversation with a property owner who says, I just don't know where to start. And Ryan's gone back to his car, and he's gotten a trash bag out, and he says, start here. And just pick up some trash right here, and when I come back next week, show me that you've worked from here to the next, so we can document that you've made progress. And as long as we continue to see progress, we're going to let you keep making it. And that approach has been our only saving grace to get a lot of these properties into compliance. But it doesn't work with everybody. Some people just aren't willing to let go of it.
In those cases, again, I personally had this experience. And because I have to tell you, a lot of it is a safety issue. It's a health hazard. You know, I won't give details here at this moment, but the reality is there are real health hazards out there in some homes. I know that for a fact.
Yes, sir.
So what do we do? Do we reach out to other agencies, state agencies? Do we? How are we doing?
Property, sir.
Yes, in some cases, or if there's evidence of a real health condition for that resident/owner, what do we do?
Well, the condemnation of a property, we don't really condemn the property. We condemn the structure. If there are issues, safety concerns with the structure itself, the county can take action, but only in certain situations. That dwelling has got to be used as a rental property, and as part of a rental complaint that the constable's office receives, we could work in that direction, give them an opportunity to get it corrected for health and safety purposes. But generally speaking, when you get outside the structure, then we're just dealing with property maintenance. There's really no room for condemning. There's no provisions for condemning a property because of property maintenance conditions outside of a structure.
Should we?
We had that debate years ago with the housing code.
Yes, sir. It seems to me that abatement would probably be the more direct approach to that.
Okay.
Mike, how much is it, you know, when you look at that picture there, it's going to be, in order for a property owner to solve that problem, they would need a truck and they would need something to, they need a check to pay at the landfill, right?
Yes,
sir. So one problem is getting it to the landfill, and then the other problem is paying for it to get it out of the truck. How much of the problem is that, right? All of a sudden it went from a couple bags of trash to 40 bags of trash because I just don't have any way. I don't have any way to get it, and I can't afford it, so I'm okay here. How much is that is true?
That's a majority. Most people fall into a hard time. They begin to pile their trash out back to save money because they don't have the funds to get it to the landfill. That balloons out of control very quickly. Once we arrive, as you can see by these pictures, it does take time to get that corrected with the owner. You know, because otherwise, the only thing we have to do is take them to court. And we take them to court and they're fined criminally, they're going to pay the fine. So the trash is going to remain so that they can pay their criminal fine and not end up in jail for non-payment.
But if the landfill, if there was a free day like we had in Lewis the other day where you get rid of your electronic equipment, right, would they be able to find a way that day to get a friend's truck or whatever and say, look, if I get this stuff out of here, I don't have to pay to get it unloaded? Would something like that work?
I think for a lot of people that would help, yes. For some, they're just not going to do it. Some, they're not going to take advantage of the help that you give them. Some have to be forced, unfortunately, to do it. But for the majority, I would say they would more than likely take advantage of something like that.
The issue then becomes that it's the reoccurring. Okay, so we do a free day and we help them get out of this. But if we only offer, if anybody were to offer a mechanism to get rid of your trash once a month, it doesn't take long to get back in a situation like that, and then it's really hard for them to catch up on that.
But if it was once a month, you would, if you got to ground zero, you would only then have a month's worth of trash to deal with.
Yes, sir. But if we were doing it once a month, who do we offer it to? And what does that total bill come to at the end of that month?
I don't have an answer for that, but I wouldn't offer it to everybody, but I would see those two people would probably be two that I would put on the list.
We started a little program with in the constable's office some time ago where we started an account with the Delaware Solid Waste Authority. And I can tell you that one of those photographs up there, I wrote out on constable's letterhead. I gave them authorization to dispose of that at our cost. The next month, it looked just like that again. So it's, where does it end at? Where does it end?
I guess it really kind of gets back down to my question earlier. And again, we can't sit here and solve all issues to all people, and I get that. But when there's opportunities to serve, could we refer them to a nonprofit that exists to help those with mental illness in that example? Because I would say in many cases that is the issue, as it was for my mom.
But how do you compel somebody to participate in an issue like that? Even if let's just say it's readily available and it's right next door, how do you compel somebody that has a hoarding disorder to participate in that.
Offer the suggestion as, you know what, we want to work together, and here's somebody that might be of assistance.
And when we've made those referrals before.
And so we have done that.
If we have somebody open up to us and tell us that they have an issue and admit to it and ask for help, we will do everything we can to find them that help. We will search phone numbers, we will forward addresses, email addresses. We will do whatever we can to help the citizens get what they need. Unfortunately, we can't make them.
Sure. So. Well, I mean, in the end, I mean, if they're in violation, right, we have a responsibility to uphold our own code, and so therefore we have to help them in some ways, correct?
Exactly.
Whether they want to be or not.
Exactly.
I think. So we do reach out, and is it 2, is it 5, is it 10, is it 20 a year? I mean, what is...
That I do not know. Be honest with you, I probably reached out to a dozen people in my first, 6 months, 8 months here. Have people that say, "Look, I just don't know what to do. I need help. I don't know where to get it." And we do what we can to try to help.
Sure.
And a large part of those referrals are actually they come to us through state programs. They say, "We don't have any way to help them. There's no nonprofit out there that can help them. Do you have anything at the county level that can help them?"
More questions to council? Questions to council?
So it's coming to this. It seems like me, we're forcing the taxpayers to help clean this up. Forget the volunteers, get the taxpayers to do it. Why should the taxpayers be forced to clean up somebody else's junk? When they throw the money away, start with down to the beer hall and down to somebody's. A lot of people burns it up and smokes it up and drinks it up and pees it away and all that kind of forces. Why are we required to do that kind of job?
Well, I don't know that anybody said we're required to do it, Mr. Wilson. I would say this. I don't know that any of us know that that person that's got that trash like that spends their money on alcohol or tobacco or whatever. You're making, I think, a leap of judgment there that they could do that.
They're heading in that direction, I believe.
Well, we don't know that.
Sam, I drink a lot of beer, but I'm not throwing all my trash in the yard.
And my mom was not a smoker, nor was she a drinker.
As I was saying, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very in-depth, very informative. You've started giving this council something to think about, I think. And I'm sure down the road here we're going to be asking for some
suggestions,
comments on things that could be changed, tweaked, whatever that makes sense. Sure. But thank you very much for your time.
Maybe get us some copies of Newcastle County's code on the way they were successfully addressing that one part of your presentation. And
yes, sir.
We ought to be looking at that. That's something I think David implied, that we could change the code and not have to worry about going for additional legislation. So, I mean, let's look at that immediately.
So you change the code by we just put up a new sign that says, only trash throws out trash.
You said that about 4 years ago, Mr. Wilson. That's impressive.
I think if you get that sign put up, maybe that might help remind people what they're doing. Just what's wrong with getting that little sign put up? Talking about putting up signs, what's wrong with that little sign?
Fix 3 votes, Sam.
I'll make a motion we do that.
I'll get back to you.
So you guys are going to, you just offered some suggestions as it relates to changing of the code to make it more streamlined.
What we provided you with is an outline about how we are dealing with it and okay. how others deal with it and what the likely results of both angles are.
Trash, so is that trash?
Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right. Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good job, guys.
Very good job. Mr. Jennings, grant requests.
All that trash.